Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Jeffers Brief. I am the founder and executive producer here at Contra Radio Network, and your humble host on the Jeffers Brief. And don't forget to listen to us on KYAH 540 AM. Again, good stuff only for you, the true listeners, the smart people. Well, it's true. It is true. Yes, it is true. All right. Couple things before we get rocking and rolling here. And it is this. Some of you don't believe me, but it's probably going to... I'm not going to say probably. For 5 years, I've been doing this broadcast. Contra Radio Network. That's what I started out with. Started out with just myself, and then others joined in. 5 years later, I'm asking you listeners for $2 a month. And for those listeners that did give, I'm just going to use their usernames on Podbean. Hey CFM, Glenn Tate, the author of 299 Days, Terry Kaz, Sag Paz, Suve, Glockstrong, A. Walker, and 4 and 12. Thank you. Thank you for your donations. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your vote of confidence. Thank you for voting with your dollars. Obviously, you're true conservatives. You believe in paying for something that you enjoy and that you get. $2 a month isn't much, folks. And now, for the round the planet. This month alone, we're 12 days into March. We have had listeners in Canada, Spain, the United Kingdom, Ireland, Russia, don't forget the NSA, the Czech Republic, Bulgaria, Australia, New Zealand, even Mexico. And we're not even 2 weeks into the month. Thank you, listeners around the world. Thank you. Tell your friends. Listeners of the United States, tell your friends. Oh, by the way, here are the five top states in downloads. And downloads for the first 12 days of this month. And I was surprised. Virginia. Oh, by the way, this is in descending order. Top five states in the United States with downloads on CRN. Virginia, Illinois, Washington State. Now, here's the surprise, boys and girls. Hold on to your hats. Connecticut and New York. Yeah. Two blue states. I'm sorry. Four blue states. Top downloads. Right here on CRN. What does that mean? Well, it means that they found a place. They're not alone anymore. And you're not. You're not. New term for Republicans who are not Republicans, who don't support a president. Their new name is no longer rhinos. They know they're rhinos. But let's really stick it to them. Let's call them the Vichy Republicans. In case you don't remember your history, it was the Vichy collaborative government in France that was collaborating with the Nazi occupiers against their own people. So yeah, Vichy France, Vichy Republicans. Call them that. Tell them that's what they are. Can't be trusted anyways. Well, they can't. Haven't got the brains God gave trees. No, no, no. What am I looking for? Here, some of you may know this guy. You may have heard of him. His name's Gator Gaynor. Gator's done some work with Prepping 2.0 with Shelby and Glenn. And he's answered a lot of questions that I had. And only because he's the guy that I figured out actually knew the answers and wasn't guessing. So let me, you know what, let me get this taken care of. And then let's get started on it, shall we? What do we got here? Let's see.
To all of the podcasters out there who are recording great content shows but are lacking the know-how or the time to edit your episodes into a concise finished product, I'm here to help. Hi, I'm Gator Gaynor, and I've been producing radio shows for a long time, and I've recently stepped into the podcast producing world to assist people just like you. So if you're needing someone to take your recorded audio and make it into a produced package that's ready for distribution, get in touch and let's figure out a plan that works for you. You can hear an example of my work on the Prepping 2.0 podcast, as well as on my SoundCloud page. Just search for Gator Gaynor. That's GatorGaynor. Find me on Facebook and email me at gator.gaynor@gmail.com. That's GATOR.GAYNOR@gmail.com.
Oh, and by the way, Gator is his real name. It's not a nickname. It's on his birth certificate. So this is the kind of guy we're talking about here. Any man that has an name Gator can't be all bad. Can't. What do we got here? Okay, this is just breaking today. And you probably won't hear it from the mainstream media. Maybe you will. I doubt it. It's called Operation Varsity Blues. Massive college admissions bribery scheme and conspiracy. 50 people arrested in the sweep. What do we got here? Yeah, well, let's see. Many wealthy people were arrested today for participating in a massive bribery scheme to gain college admission for their families. The Justice Department charged 50 people, including two TV stars, with being part of a long-running bribery scheme to get privileged children into big-name colleges and universities. Let's take a listen.
Operation Varsity Blues culminated early this morning when approximately 300 special agents from the FBI and the IRS criminal investigations set out to arrest 46 individuals across the country for their roles in an international college admissions bribery and money laundering scam. So far, 38 individuals have been safely taken into custody, and seven are working towards surrender. One is being actively pursued. Another four are expected to plead guilty here in Boston, two later today, and two in the coming weeks. We believe all of them, parents, coaches, and facilitators, lied, cheated, and covered up their crimes at the expense of hardworking students and taxpayers everywhere. Our investigation began last May after we uncovered evidence of a large-scale, elaborate fraud while working an unrelated undercover operation. Following 10 months of intense investigative efforts using a variety of sophisticated techniques, the FBI uncovered what we believe is a rigged system, robbing students all over the country of their right at a fair shot to getting into some of the most elite universities in this country, such as Yale, Stanford, and Georgetown. We believe everyone charged here today had a role in fostering a culture of corruption and greed that created an uneven playing field for students trying to get into these schools the right way through hard work, good grades, and community service. Unfortunately, what many students didn't know was that the odds had already been stacked against them by corrupt practices, including but not limited to bribery, falsification of athletic profiles, and near-perfect SAT and ACT scores that were fraudulently obtained on behalf of other students, when in reality they were far from perfect. Make no mistake, this is not a case where parents were acting in the best interests of their children. This is a case where they flaunted their wealth, sparing no expense, to cheat the system so they could set their children up for success with the best education money could buy, literally. Some spent anywhere from $200,000 to $6.5 million for guaranteed admission. Their actions were, without a doubt, insidious, selfish, and shameful.
Yeah, we thank Global News for that. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Dozens of individuals, this is from the Boston DOJ, if the DOJ has any credibility left, there's very little of it, I'm sure. Dozens of individuals involved in a nationwide conspiracy that facilitated cheating on college entrance exams and the admissions of students to elite universities as purported athletic recruits were arrested by federal agents in multiple states this morning and charged in federal court in Boston. Athletic coaches from Yale, Stanford, USC, Wake Forest, and Georgetown, among others, are implicated, as well as parents and exam administrators. William Rick Singer, 58, of Newport Beach, California, was charged with racketeering, conspiracy, money laundering conspiracy, obstruction of justice. Singer owned and operated the Edge College and Career Network, LLC, known as The Key, a for-profit college counseling and preparation business, and served as CEO of the Key Worldwide Foundation, a nonprofit corporation that he established as a purported charity. Yeah, charity for one. Between approximately 2011 and February 2019, Singer allegedly conspired with dozens of parents, athletic coaches, university athletics administrator, and others to use bribery and other forms of fraud to secure the admission of students to colleges and universities, including Yale University, Georgetown University, Stanford University, the University of Southern California, and Wake Forest University, among others. Also charged with their involvement in the scheme are 33 parents and 13 coaches and associates of Singer's businesses, including two SAT and ACT test administrators. Also charged is John Vandermoor, the head sailing coach at Stanford University, Rudolph Rudy Meredith, the former head soccer coach at Yale University, and Mark Rydell, a counselor at a private school in Bradenton, Florida. The conspiracy involved, one, bribing SAT and ACT exam administrators to allow a test taker, typically Rydell, to secretly take college entrance exams in place of students or to correct the students' answers after they had taken the exam. Two, bribing university athletic coaches and administrators, including coaches at Yale, Stanford, Georgetown, USC, and the University of Texas, to facilitate the admission of students to elite universities under the guise of being recruited as athletes. And three, using the facade of Singer's charitable organization to conceal the nature and source of the bribes. You want to here, let's listen to Alan Dershowitz. Let me tell you what he thinks about it. He's probably going to go off.
Joined now by Professor Alan Dershowitz of Harvard Law School. He's Professor Emeritus there. Sir, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, just to explain to people who are just joining us, this William Singer was allegedly the leader of this ring, and he operated out of Southern California, at least in part, as somebody who helped your kid get into college. He did admissions counseling. And his approach initially was two-pronged. He had one very elaborate scheme to help kids cheat on the ACT or the SAT, which involved having them submit a note from a doctor that they needed extra time because they had learning disabilities, and then he would get someone in the room to either take the test or change their answers. His other venue was to bribe coaches at various universities to say that they were recruiting the child for one of the athlete spots and get them in that way. That coach would take a bribe, and then when the kid got to school, mm-hmm. they would either fake an injury, not, you know, join the team for a minute and quit, or just say that they changed their mind about playing the sport. And some people, they said, they alleged in this press conference, paid as much as $6 million, and they paid the money to a charity. So everybody involved deducted the amount of their bribe from mm-hmm. their taxes.
Wow. Oh.
What is the penalty for something like this? I mean, how do you see this case unfolding?
Well, first of all, this is the worst scandal involving elite universities in the history of the United States. Let there be no doubt about this. Nobody can diminish the importance of this, involving as it does some of the major, major universities in the country. Look, every individual who's charged should be presumed innocent. We have to wait and hear the evidence. but this involves the most elite universities, coaches, the SAT, the ACT. This is really one of the great scandals of the 21st century. Having said that, I think it's just the tip of the iceberg. Remember, this doesn't involve the super, super rich. The super, super rich buy buildings for the university. Yeah. They donate hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. They don't have to worry about their kids getting in. This involves the very rich, the people who can't quite afford to give a building, but can afford to spend $5 or $6 million. And once this investigation is complete, we will see that all this person, Singer, if the allegations are true, went over any possible line and did clearly commit crimes, and apparently he's pleading guilty, that in some respects this is a matter of degree, that we will see other mini scandals involving contributions to the universities, coaches who are prepared to stretch the rules. Look, at bottom, you know, the fault for this lies in the fact that we've abolished grades at universities in many parts of the country. Nobody fails anymore. Because if we went back to the situation that occurred when I started teaching at Harvard almost 60 years ago, this couldn't work because these students would fail out. It didn't pay for them to come into a college because they wouldn't make it through if they didn't have the academic resources to make it. But today nobody fails. And today nobody gets bad grades. Nobody even gets C's. And in many universities, they've abolished grades. So there's no way of testing whether they are qualified or competent. Once they get into college, many just sail through because of the way universities have decided to treat their students. And so I think we will see this as the tip of a very, very deep iceberg. Look, I don't believe there should be special slots for athletes. Colleges are not supposed to be about athletics. Athletics are supposed to be collateral. But today, kids who aren't qualified or are minimally qualified get in because they're a good quarterback or a good soccer player. That's the beginning of the problem. Now, this case doesn't involve that. This case involves overt cheating, and particularly on the SATs and bribery. And so it crosses a line. But I think once this investigation unfolds, we'll see that there is more to this than just the really bad guys at one end of this spectrum. It's a continuum.
Yeah.
There you go. Alan Dershowitz laying it down. Thank you, Fox News. Appreciate it for the clip. What else? Oh, what else do I want to talk to? Yeah. Hey, you guys like Candace Owens? Love Candace Owens. Love her. Love her, I do. She cracks me up. And she calls it like she sees it. I really do, yeah, you know. But I wanted you to take a listen to this. She's talking about that black Americans and Latinos are exiting the Democratic Party. Listen to this.
Minorities have been used in this country. And all of that changes today. We figured out that the left is using us to secure votes and to keep themselves in power and to keep themselves rich.
The mission of conservative values will resonate with people who are here and inspire them.
We hit the home run when we were born and raised in America. There are 7 billion people in the world. The majority of them would trade places with us if only they could.
My country tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty of thee, I sing.
Minorities do not belong to the left. We belong to nobody but ourselves and God.
No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied.
We are separating ourselves from the victim narrative.
The Democratic Party has been able to tell and dictate for too long who we are.
It's a mentality that you don't have to think a certain way just because you look a certain way.
It's not racism that is keeping us out of the American dream. It's the lies that we've been told.
We have to put this to a stop, and we have a president that's willing to do it.
They are trying to turn us into single-issue voters, and they will never take our vote. This is our official declaration of independence from the left. This is the beginning of the revolution, and we are going to save America.
There you go. It's Candace Owens. You know, something I saw at CPAC. Actually, I didn't see it on the mainstream media. They would never show this, but Candace posted it. Video of Black Americans, Latino Americans at CPAC, sitting in the audience, many wearing the red hat. Yeah, that's right. It's happening. Hey, and you know something else? All the Republican Party needs, conservatives need, is a shift of 5% of the minority vote. 5%. And that kills the Democrats. Now, of course, now we know why they want, you know, they don't want, you know, the Democrats don't want foreign influence in our elections, but they don't have a problem with making sure that illegals here in this country have the right to vote. You tell me about it. What do you think? I don't have to tell you. You guys are a smart audience. Very smart. However, on to more things. What have we got? What else have I got? Ah, you guys heard about Tucker Carlson, right? Where are we? Let me make sure I get this straight. I don't want to screw this up. This is from Sundance. He picked up on it on The Last Refuge. Fox News host Tucker Carlson is the latest target for the leftist horde. In response to their ultimately predictable behavior, Carlson outlines their bigger picture objective. Those who have followed the arc of leftist advancement will note that within his counterpunch, the remarks by Carlson are almost identical to those expressed by David Mamet. Mamet famously stated, essentially, in order to advance their objectives, modern progressives, for example, ideological leftists, need to pretend not to know things. For it is only by pretense that leftists can avoid the inherent hypocrisy within their position. For a recent example, it is pearl-clutching immoral for Trump to call out federal judges. Meanwhile, leftists currently attack the judge over the recent Manafort sentence. Ultimately, the immoral and non-virtuous professional leftist always accuses his opposition of what he himself is inherently guilty of doing. Now, it is worth noting that part of the leftist severity in reaction to President Trump is because Trump punches back against their political correct hypocrisy. That unapologetic pushback triggers them every time. Here, listen to Tucker talk about it.
Never acknowledge the comic absurdity of the whole thing. You can never laugh in the face of the mob. You must always pretend that the people yelling at you are somehow your moral superiors. You have to assume that what they say they're mad about is what they're actually mad about. You have to take them at face value. You must pretend this is a debate about virtue and not about power. That your critics are arguing from principle and not from partisanship. No matter what they take from you in the end, you must continue to pretend that these things are true. You are bad, they are good, the system is on the level. But what if we stopped pretending for a minute? What if we acknowledged what's actually going on? One side is deadly serious. They believe that politics is war. They're not interested in abstractions or principles, rules or traditions. They seek power, and they plan to win it, whatever it takes. If that includes getting you fired or silencing you or threatening your family at home or throwing you in prison, okay. They know what their goal is. If you're in the way, they will crush you. What's interesting is how reliably the other side pretends that none of this is happening. Republicans in Washington do a fairly credible imitation of an opposition party.
Hold it. He's talking right now about the Vichy Republicans. Go ahead.
They still give speeches. They tweet quite a bit. They make concerned noises about how liberals are bad. But on the deepest level, it's all a pose. In their minds, where it matters, Republican leaders are controlled by the left. They know exactly what they're allowed to say and believe. They know what the rules are. They may understand that those rules are written by the very people who seek their destruction. They ruthlessly enforce them anyway. Republicans in Washington police their own with a never-ending enthusiasm. Like trustees at a prison, they dutifully report back to the warden, hoping for perks. Nobody wants to be called names. Nobody wants to be Trump. How many times have you seen it happen? Some conservative figure will say something stupid or incomplete or too far outside the bounds of received wisdom for the moral guardians of cable news. Twitter goes bonkers. The mob demands a response. Very often, the first people calling for the destruction of that person are Republican leaders. You saw it with the Covington Catholic High School kids. You see it all the time. Kevin McCarthy spends half his day telling Republican members not to criticize progressive orthodoxy. Paul Ryan did the same before him. A couple of years ago, the entire Democratic Party decided to deny the biological reality of sex differences, an idea that's as insane as it is dangerous. Republican leaders decided not to criticize them for it. They might get upset. This is a system built on deceit and enforced silence. Hypocrisy is its hallmark. Yet in Washington, it's considered rude to ask questions about how exactly it works. Why are the people who consider Bill Clinton a hero lecturing me about sexism? How can the party that demands racial quotas denounce other people as racist? After a while, you begin to think that maybe their criticisms aren't sincere. Maybe their moral puffery is a costume. Maybe the whole conversation is an absurd joke. Maybe we're falling for it. You sometimes hear modern progressives described as new Puritans. That's a slur on colonial Americans. Whatever their flaws, the Puritans cared about the fate of the human soul and the moral regeneration of their society. Those are not topics that interest progressives. They're too busy pushing late-term abortion and cross-dressing on fifth graders. These are the people who write our movies and our sitcoms. They are not shocked by naughty words. They just pretend to be when it's useful. It's been very useful lately. The left's main goal, in case you haven't noticed, is controlling what you think. In order to do that, they have to control the information that you receive. Google and Facebook and Twitter are fully on board with that. They're happy to ban unapproved thoughts, and they don't apologize for it. They often do. So do the other cable channels and virtually every major news outlet in this country. One of the only places left in the United States where independent thoughts are allowed is right here, the Opinion Hours on this network. Just a few hours in a sea of television programming. It's not much, relatively speaking. For the left, it's unacceptable. They demand total conformity. Since the day we went on the air, they've been working hard to kill this show. We haven't said much about it in public. It seemed too self-referential. The point of this show has never been us. But now it's obvious to everybody. There's no pretending that it's not happening. It is happening. And so going forward, we'll be covering their efforts to make us be quiet. For now, though, just two points to leave you with. First, Fox News is behind us, as they have been since the very first day. Toughness is a rare quality at a TV network, and we are grateful for that. Second, we've always apologized when we're wrong, and we'll continue to do that. That's what decent people do. They apologize. But we will never bow to the mob. Ever. No matter what. They say they're mad about it.
Well, there you go. That was Tucker talking about it. And then, I mean, you know Tammy Bruce. I like Tammy. The issue with Tammy is she used to be a liberal. Now she's a conservative. And there's nothing more dangerous than a convert. Because a convert is a fanatic. Not the true believers. The true believers is like preaching to the choir. It's when you have a convert. Now you have a fanatic. And this is Tammy Bruce. She's commenting on the left's crackdown on dissent. This is, I believe, from Tucker Carlson's show. Take a listen.
Tammy Bruce is a radio host and president of Independent Women's Voice. She joins us tonight. Tammy, thanks a lot for coming on.
Well, it's an honor to be here.
I've never said this. I worked at Fox for 10 years. I've never said this on the air, but I've thought it the whole time. You've got one channel that disagrees with all the other channels. You have an island of dissent in the middle of a sea of sameness, and that's too much for them. And I wonder if we've been lying to ourselves about the extent to which they would like to shut this channel down.
I don't think so. What you've described in your commentary is totalitarianism. We've seen it unfold. It is, in fact, part of why I left the left. My first book is called The New Thought Police, warning about this trajectory, that the use of the complaining about words or opinions was beyond the conversations that we normally have. It was being designed, and the environment was being designed to be able to destroy people. Now, I love coming on this show. I am honored and proud to be a part of Fox News, specifically for what you discussed. I've never been told what to say. I've never been told what not to say. That's I've right. never been removed because of a presumption of what my opinion would be. You and I will disagree and have, and we disagree on many issues.
Yes.
We will take issue with each other. We even will disappoint each other on occasion. But what we embody here is that we care about each other, we will have those conversations, and we will be able to have them about other people and have that exchange. What's manifesting here is a desire to shut that down across the board. And if the left thinks that that's a monster that they're going to be able to control and just aim at us, they're going to be very surprised when that monster gets out of its bottle and begins to move amongst all of them. And this is what I think is a problem for society in general and for the larger effort about being able to have these conversations, become a better nation and become better people, and embrace ourselves and the First Amendment, especially when it's difficult.
So I don't really understand the mindset that leads to, and you see it on display in the other channels even now, to want to shut down people who disagree. I grew up in a world where magazines were important, and you had National Review and the American Spectator, and then you had The Nation and Mother Jones and Village Voice.
Sure.
It never occurred to me to want to shut the other side down. Why would they want to stop all dissent? What's the point of that?
Well, part of what I had a hand in and what I still work on making up for in these years is this design of individuals who we really couldn't argue the details of the issues. We couldn't really persuade people on the issues. And the way then, and we've seen, of course, it's not just the American left, but the left around the world. The only way that the left can survive is by shutting down dissent, literally, and eliminating the individuals who might speak up, even just with a different idea. The idea, as you've noted, on the issue of conformity, any voice or any individual that is a reminder that we can approach things differently and sometimes offend people and sometimes make mistakes and, as you said, apologize. But the difference is that the left can't withstand an environment where there's any challenging because they rely on the collective. They don't rely on ideas. They rely on fear and division and controlling people within that framework. You see it unfolding, of course, still in Venezuela, in Cuba. It was the collapse of the Soviet Union. It's the antithesis to individual personal freedom, which involves the need to have larger conversations, to be able to speak our mind without fear and without being bullied or threatened because
right.
we might deviate from what the left deems to be a proper and pure thought.
We're almost out of time, but I just want to know if you think it's right that Republicans in Washington, some of our leaders, people who should be standing up for the other side, for the other view, seem terrified to stray outside the lines.
Again, who's he referring to? The Vichy Republicans. Continue.
Well, that have been set down by their enemies.
Look, our society, social media, there's a lot of great stuff about social media, but there is a concentration of rage that very often is contrived. It's manipulated
yes.
and managed politically. And on social media, it suddenly seems like it's organic, but it's not. And it frightens politicians who think that that's a real reflection of real life. Look, people are genuinely involved and engaged in the things that matter in our lives. As a feminist, it matters to me how we're all portrayed, but at the same time, we've got to have freedom of thought and freedom of expression, and we have a role in that, and so do the politicians. They've got to feel strong enough and free enough that they can speak their minds and stand up for what's right.
Tammy Bruce, an old-fashioned liberal, and I mean that as a compliment. Great to
Thank
see you.
You.
Thank
sir.
You.
There you go. Let's see. Fanatics are dangerous, especially when they're converts. All right. There's something here. That was from Sundance. Thanks for the lead, buddy. The American Spectator. You heard Tucker Carlson mention it. Dove Fisher put out this great article. And I think we need to pay attention to it. And it's what he entitled it, First They Came for the Catholics, Then for the Christians, and Then for the High School Kids. The war on Catholic judicial appointments began in 2017 when Dianne Feinstein used her seat on the Senate Judiciary Committee to go after Judge Amy Coney Barrett, President Trump's nominee for a seat on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit, who hopefully will soon be a selection for the United States Supreme Court as soon as the angel of death finds Ginsburg. Now that old coffin dodger can't last forever. In Feinstein's shockingly bigoted words barked at Judge Barrett, "The dogma lives loudly within you." That was not enough for Senator Feinstein, whose own lineage traces to maternal grandparents who abandoned Judaism for Russian Orthodox Christianity long before she was ever born. Now, interesting, isn't it? How many Jews are not Jews? Thus, Feinstein graduated from San Francisco's Convent of the Sacred Heart High School. In berating Judge Barrett's devout faith, Feinstein rhetorically asked, "Why is it that so many of us on this side have this very uncomfortable feeling? Why indeed? Problems with an unsympathetic teacher in the 11th grade? Politics in California's one-party state?" Next came Brett Kavanaugh, another devout Catholic with an impeccable life record of personal dignity and character. The Senate Judiciary Committee attempted to destroy this extraordinary human being, husband and father, with a despicable mix of vile character assassination, insidiously planted false memory, outright perjury, and clownish circus performances that shamed his accusers and that finally elicited one of the finest elocutions in American political history when Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina had enough. Do you remember this?
For over 20 days.
I did not know that at the time.
If you wanted an FBI investigation, you could have come to us. What you want to do is destroy this guy's life, hold this seat open, and hope you win in 2020. You've said that, not me. You've got nothing to apologize for. When you see Sotomayor and Kagan, tell them that Lindsey said hello, because I voted for them. I would never do to them what you've done to this guy. This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics. And if you really wanted to know the truth, you sure as hell wouldn't have done what you've done to this guy. Are you a gang rapist?
No.
I cannot imagine what you and your family have gone through. Boy, y'all want power. God, I hope you never get it. I hope the American people can see through this sham, that you knew about it and you held it. You had no intention of protecting Dr. Ford. None. She's as much of a victim as you are. God, I hate to say it, because these have been my friends. But let me tell you, when it comes to this, you're looking for a fair process. You came to the wrong town at the wrong time, my friend. Do you consider this a job interview?
The advice and consent role is like a job
interview. You consider that you've been through a job interview?
I've been through a process of advice and consent under the Constitution.
You say you've been through hell?
I've been through hell and then some.
This is not a job interview.
Yeah.
This is hell.
This
is going to destroy the ability of good people to come forward because of this crap. Your high school yearbook. You have interacted with professional women all your life, not one accusation. You're supposed to be Bill Cosby when you're a junior and senior in high school. And all of a sudden you got over it. It's been my understanding that if you drug women and rape them for 2 years in high school, you probably don't stop. Here's my understanding. If you lived a good life, people would recognize it, like the American Bar Association has the gold standard. His integrity is absolutely unquestioned. He is the very circumspect in his personal conduct, harbors no biases or prejudices. He's entirely ethical, is a really decent person. He is warm, friendly, unassuming. He's the nicest person. The ABA. And one thing I can tell you, you should be proud of. Ashley, you should be proud of this, that you raised a daughter who had the good character to pray for Dr. Ford. To my Republican colleagues, if you vote no, you're legitimizing the most despicable thing I have seen in my time in politics. You want this seat? I hope you never get it. I hope you're on the Supreme Court. That's exactly where you should be. And I hope that the American people will see through this charade. And I wish you well, and I intend to vote for you, and I hope everybody who's fair-minded will. Are you aware?
There you go. You remember that? I agree with Fisher. One of the finest elocutions in American political history. I think it is. But Justice Kavanaugh emerged bruised but unscathed, and bruises not only heal but disappear. After a hiatus from Catholic baiting, or as judges and elementary school teachers might say, after a short recess, the Catholic hater has returned to their truest KKK Catholic baiting fashion. Kamala Harris, vying for the Democratic presidential nod, joined forces with America's 100th smartest U.S. Senator, the Honorable Mazie Hirono, to besiege Brian Buescher, President Trump's nominee for a federal district judicial seat in Nebraska, attacking him for his membership in the charitable 137-year-old Catholic Fraternal Order Knights of Columbus. Hirono demanded, "The Knights of Columbus has taken a number of extreme positions. If confirmed, do you intend to end your membership with this organization to avoid any appearance of bias?" Harris then double-teamed on the attack, prompting the nominee to respond that his activity the Knights of Columbus has centered on charitable and community events in local Catholic parishes. He added, "I do not recall if I was aware whether the Knights of Columbus had taken a position on the abortion issue when I joined at the age of 18. The 2-million-member Knights of Columbus Fraternal Order was founded in 1882 as a mutual benefit society in great measure to combat the Ku Klux Klan anti-Catholic xenophobia amplified by rising immigration from Ireland in the mid-19th century and later from Italy, Poland, and other predominantly Catholic countries in Europe. It was a time when Catholics were barred from many labor unions and other fraternal bodies. Such fraternal orders hardly are sinister. In much the same way, and for much the same reasons, the American Jewish immigrants from Germany during the age of Metternich launched the B'nai B'rith Fraternal Order in 1843. 7 decades later, Tom Watson of Georgia helped incite the 1916 lynching of Leo Frank, a member of the B'nai B'rith. A quarter century later, Adolf Hitler went after the charitable mutual benefit Freemasons Fraternal Order. In all, I want to make a quick point about that before I get all these. And the note is this. I have been a member of the Freemasons. This idea that all Freemasons are in lockstep to overthrow and rule the world. I can personally testify to the fact that we can't even decide what to have for lunch. A ham sandwich or a turkey sandwich. We can't decide on it. And that's with about 20 or 30 people. Anyways, Freemasons were murdered by the Nazis simply because they were members of the non-sectarian order. Now, we laughed when television comedy portrayed Alice Crandon and Trixie Norton going after their ridiculous husbands, Ralph and Ed, for their silly The Royal Order of Raccoons. But it was no laughing matter when the three anti-Catholic bigots in the United States Senate, went after Judge Barrett and the Knights of Columbus. Perhaps a warning should be directed to those amazingly brave kids in the Shriners hospitals and the Mummers in Philadelphia, because they may be next. Now, under the United States Constitution, Article 6, Clause 3, senators and representatives before mentioned, and the members of the several state legislatures, and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. But no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. A great many prominent Catholics in American national public life today, like most Jews in that public arena, seem theologically lapsed, at best apathetic, and at worst contemptuous of their religions. With the striking exception of former Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut, former Treasurer Jack Lew, and the former U.S. Attorney General Michael Mukasey, today's Jews in Congress and in public office universally fail to observe the kosher dietary values that define a Jew, and they ignore the Sabbath observances that are at the core of Jewish existence. While Hillary Clinton never ceased telling that she would be the first female president, and while Obama's campaigns emphasized that he would be the first black president, tellingly, Bernie Sanders is so utterly unconnected Jewishly that he, you know, thankfully, never regards that he would be the first Jew so chosen. Instead, Sanders has introduced virulently anti-Israel elements into the Democratic Party that had not existed before. Regularly defends Jew-hating comments from Representative Ilhan Omar, and he and Dianne Feinstein are the two consistently strongest and regular critics of Israel in the Senate. In similar fashion, the Catholics, we Americans best know in Congress, seem to be Pelosi, Biden, and Kennedy clan types, all of whose stands on issues ranging from abortion and guarding the lives of the unborn, to marriage rules, to birth control and Obamacare, to assisted suicide, and to so many other areas of devout Catholic faith seem rather incongruous with the teachings that are associated with core Catholic values. And New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo now leads the charge nationally for decriminalizing all abortion, removing the need to proffer any reason at all for aborting a fetus in the first 24 weeks of life, expanding the right to abort the fetus life even at the final moment of childbirth, and even decriminalizing the killing of fetuses as part of violent crimes of battery. We are supposed to bar religious tests in this country. At this fascinating juncture in time, as it happens, six of the United States Supreme Court justices are Catholic. And it certainly seems that Sonia Sotomayor's religion is very different from that of Justice Samuel Alito. Duff Fisher says, "I am an Orthodox Jew, a practicing rabbi, and a law professor. As such, I believe that every word of the Torah is true and was placed by Moses before the Jews, by God's dictated word transcribed by Moses' hand. That does not conflict with my reality that I regularly have students whose politics differ from mine, whose approaches to sexual identity differ from my Weltanschauung, who have views different from mine on matters ranging from abortion to marriage to assisted suicide, so be it. There are clear professional demarcations that define my duties to my different professional constituencies, and I know where they are drawn. So it is for Orthodox Jews. So it is for Bible-believing Protestants, for Christians, for devout Catholics. We know what we believe, what we practice, and we know how and where to draw lines when they must be drawn between that which is of God and that which is of Caesar. We know that the time to kneel is at church or during the Yom Kippur Musaf service, and not during the playing of our national anthem that honors our countrymen, where in God we trust. And so it is for a person of faith when selected to be a federal or state judge. An honest judge engages in the process of judging." Well, you would think so, right? Okay. So, "As an honest judge learns and studies the law, interprets the law as it codifies originally intended, and applies it dispassionately and as fairly as he or she can, And as much as Democrats orient towards the kind of Obama judges who blithely set the law aside, superimpose instead their own gut feelings as to what they feel the law should be, and then go on scavenger hunts looking for prior settled law to twist into the perfect shape needed to justify the gut ruling. The Kamala Harris's and Mazie Hirano's and Dianne Feinstein's therefore wrongly imply that a conservative judges of faith would do as they corruptly would do. However, the assumption is faulty. A conservative judge respects the law as codified and applies it as fairly as can be interpreted. Then they came after Naomi Rea. President Trump's nominee to fill the seat previously held on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals by Justice Kavanaugh. That court deals with federal regulatory appeals, and Rayo is perfectly suited for that position because she has been head for the U.S. Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. Previously, she had founded the Center for the Study of the Administrative State at George Mason. She has degrees from Yale and the University of Chicago Law School, and she clerked at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit for Judge J. Harvey Wilkinson, a Reagan appointee, and then in the U.S. Supreme Court for Justice Clarence Thomas. When in college some 20 years ago, Ms. Rao wrote that a man who rapes a drunk girl should be prosecuted. At the same time, a good way to avoid a potential date rape is to stay reasonably sober. For that, she was put into the left liberal food grinder by the likes of Cory Booker, the Senate Judiciary Committee's vegan Spartacus gladiator. Another Democrat candidate vying for president. In a remarkably outrageous, offensive, somewhat dim-witted manner, reflecting incredibly poor preparation for questioning, Booker's interrogation stumbled forward as reported. Booker asked, "Are gay relationships, in your opinion, immoral?" Rao began, "Senator, I'm not sure the relevance of that to..." And he says, "I think it's relevant to your opinion if you think African-American relationships are immoral. Do you think gay relationships are immoral?" Booker interjected. "I do not," she responded. "Do you believe they are a sin?" Booker continued. "Senator, my personal views on any of these subjects are things I would put to one side," she replied. "So you're not saying here whether you believe it is sinful for two men to be married. You're not willing to comment on that?" Booker asked. "Senator, no," she said. "Excuse me," Booker said. "I didn't hear your response." "My answer is that these personal views are ones that I would put to one side, whatever my personal views are on this subject. I would faithfully follow the precedents of the Supreme Court," she replied. "Have you ever had an LGBTQ law clerk?" Booker then asked. "I have not been a judge, so I don't have any law clerks," Rao responded. "I'm sorry, someone working for you?" Booker continued. "To be honest, I don't know the sexual orientation of my staff," she said. "I take people as they come, irrespective of their race, ethnicity, or sexual orientation." Now, Rao is neither Catholic nor Christian, rather the Yale and University of Law School grad's ethnic heritage traces to her parents' Parsi roots, stemming from the Zoroastrian Persian community who fled to India in the 7th century to avoid Muslim persecution. Both her parents were medical doctors and illegally immigrated to Michigan in 1972 with their medical degrees and $16 to their names. Her academic career is stellar, and go figure, it is reported that she converted to Judaism when she married her husband, Alan Lefkowitz. Are you following this? Do you understand what we're talking about? I know you guys are. So it began with the Catholics. In time came the onslaught against Nick Sandman and his classmates at Cummington Catholic High School, and then they started coming after the teachers of Christian school children. Karen Pence, married to Vice President, accepted a teaching job at Emmanuel Christian School in Springfield, Virginia, and the attacks began. It is a Christian school, so teachers affirm that they accept the Bible statement that marriage is between a man and a woman. In the words of Vice President Pence, "We have a rich tradition in America of Christian education and, frankly, religious education broadly defined. We celebrate it. The freedom of religion is enshrined in the Constitution of the United States. The Constitution prohibits a religious test for holding a public office. And so we'll let the other critics roll off our back, but this criticism of Christian education in America should stop." Speaking of his wife, he added that she is many things. She's a mother. She's an advocate for military families. She's even an art teacher at a Christian school. And I couldn't be more proud of our second lady, my wife, Karen Pence. Meanwhile, in Colorado, they have now disqualified Brendan Johnston from the state's high school wrestling championships. Johnston is a Christian teen boy who politely, as a matter of religious principle and personal conscience, refused to wrestle a girl. As he explained, there is something that I really do find problematic about the idea of wrestling with a girl, and a part of that comes from my faith and my belief. And a part of that does come from how I was raised to treat women. I don't think that I am looking at them as not equal. I am saying that they are women, and that is different than being men, because I do believe that men and women are different. We are made differently. But I still believe that women are of equal value to men. I don't think that seeing men and women as different opposes the idea of equality. First they went after the Catholics, then after the Christians, then after the Indo-Asian Zoroastrians, and then after the kids. Yet, in God we trust. Pretty interesting stuff, huh? I thought so. And I wanted to bring it to your attention because I'm sure it's going to come up again very shortly. All right. We haven't done this for 2-3 weeks? Well, we're going to do it now. Are you ready? Yes, it's time once again to find out what our social justice warriors are up to today. Yes, it's time to see. Let's find out what they're doing in the world of social justice this week. Massachusetts lawmakers to vote on bill equating counseling for gender confusion with child abuse. Glad is to honor Jay-Z despite his long history of anti-gay lyrics. Yeah, you know, these are the same clowns who defend Islam, even though if you're gay, you know, over the Middle East, the Muslims will toss your butt from the roof of the nearest building. Yes, I find it unique as well. Boston University said it is dangerous for white people to treat everyone equally. A guest lecturer at Boston University last week told students that it is dangerous for white students to not see race. Central Washington U affirmative action plan will decrease male hiring. Speaking of that, do not go see Captain Marvel. The precious little professional pretender that in the lead role says during the making of the film, I want as little white males working on the film as possible. I would assume she'd be okay with as little white male dollars going to the box office to see her piece of trash. I'm just saying, hey, figure it out, people. Let me see. There was an event of the Oxford Society's Christina Arriaga's to explore the impact of war on women. Okay. Michigan State University fundraiser focuses on mocking President Trump. Now, isn't that a worthy academic pursuit of a higher education institution like the Michigan State University? Oh, good Lord, I can't even stand it. I can't even stand it with these people. Reed College claims Make America Great Again is white supremacy. A training seminar at Reed College this year included a graphic that suggests that the phrase Make America Great Again is an example of covert white supremacy. Really? When does the insanity stop? When? I don't know. All right. I've got time for maybe one more. Let's check it out here. Who else we have here? Harvard hires diversity officer as school faces discrimination lawsuit verdict. Oh, no. See, that's what happens. It usually backfires on them. All right, look. I'm John Jeffers here on the Jeffers Brief. I would like to take this time to remind you, I'm asking for $2 a month. Go to contrarionetwork.podbean.com. You'll see the patron button. Boink. Click it. I'm asking $2 a month. I don't think I'm asking that much. You get a lot here on CRN. A lot. All right. Don't forget to listen to us on KYAH 540 AM. We appreciate it. And until that time, have a good one. We'll see you.